Let's go back into session. I think we said 1 o'clock, and I apologize. It didn't exactly go per plan. So we're going to move on to item number 4, public workshop, to solicit comments on the draft order R1-2013-059, a waiver of waste discharge requirements and general water quality certification for Mendocino County Resource Conservation District's Mendocino County Permitting and Coordinating Board. We have Mr. Jonathan Norman in this.
Quite mouthful.
Yes.
Chairman Norman, board members, thanks for having me. Good afternoon. You mind if I stand up while I'm presenting? Is that all right?
It's fair.
Is that okay? Scare you a little bit? I'm trying to intimidate you.
It's your pleasure.
Pull it straight up.
Excuse me.
That's not a problem.
Just say your name, John.
Jonathan Norman, environmental scientist with your staff. I like rooms with this much head space, so I want to take advantage of it. This is my house, actually. So good afternoon. I'm going to begin discussing today. There's a public workshop to discuss the Mendocino County Permit Coordination Program, as well as the permit that we are developing as it's actually developed that we'll be proposing to you in November for consideration. So, before I start, actually, I'm going to skip a slide. So, I think this is an appropriate theme for this presentation. It is literally true that you can succeed best and quickest by helping others to succeed. This is something that I've heard several times already today, kind of a discussion of how we can help facilitate projects moving forward, working with our partners and our landowners to get some things done. So just thought that was appropriate for this. And I have a cheat sheet. This is it. This is my entire presentation in one slide. So if you kind of start getting a little confused at some point, I'd refer back to this. I'm going to walk you through it really quick. So the Mendocino County Permit Coordination Program is like a conservation and restoration project machine. And right there, that's our main gear, the right there in the center. I want to actually introduce Patty Madigan, who is the conservation program coordinator for the Mendocino RCD. She's sitting in the back. And she's been here all day, and she's headed to another meeting after, so I'm glad that she could stick around for after lunch. She's been a great partner to us over the last couple of years, so it's a great time to work here. So, the Permit Coordination Program is exactly as the title suggests. The intent is to coordinate permits and find exactly what I'm aiming at with this.
What you need?
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. Fling it that way.
There you go. So in the arena of permitting, there's all these state and federal agencies that projects must work with to try and get the permits to appropriately implement them. So we have the Army Corps of Engineers, a federal agency. We have our own authority under Clean Water Act, Port of Cologne, and California Department of Fish and Wildlife has a 1600 permitting process. Fish and Wildlife Service and NOAA offer an incidental take authorization for certain projects. So what the Permit Coordination Program does is it gets those different projects together, gathers them, and it works like a machine. It spends them, it functions in a way so that you can help motivate and facilitate these projects. But just want to kind of keep that in mind, that's what we're talking about here, is the Mendocino County Permit Coordination Program in the center, and I'll also be discussing our own permit that we're developing and we'll be proposing for your consideration in November. So the topics of today, I'm going to cover the county's conservation and restoration needs, the permitting process, the permit coordination program, and then the actual draft order that I mentioned. I like this map on the far left. I really enjoy the history of Northern California. I think it's fascinating how things have come to be where we're at, and this map is circa 1905 in Mendocino County. So, Mendocino County's conservation and restoration needs. I've been working in the county now for 10 years. I started doing timber harvesting early in 2000, 2001. And around 2003, I actually switched over and I started being the lead staffer implementing the Garcia River TMDL. I've been doing that ever since. And I've gotten to know the watershed and some of the players out there, and it's an amazing place. I really feel fortunate to have spent my years out there. We have these amazing oak woodlands and grasslands up in the upper parts of the watersheds to these really large, impressive conifer forests that drain down into different basins and rivers, and then a really bountiful coast. And it's a really special place. People are always known that, and that's why people have been inhabiting it for over 10,000 years. But with that, with all those resources, you know, with popularity sometimes comes problems. And over the years, there's been a series of impacts that have come into play and have affected all of our different watersheds. And so initially, it was population growth, which led to forest conversions for ag and grazing in the early 19th or mid-19th century. And then we had three waves of timber harvesting, and kind of a primitive one that was, again, 19th century, the early 20th century. And then the middle, which led us up, it was post-World War II to the advent of the Forest Practice Rules and Forest Practice Act. And I've highlighted that in particular, I'll touch on that in a moment. Then we went from after the Forest Practice Act to the present. There's also been gravel mining and marijuana cultivation is kind of our most current impact that we keep bringing up. The middle period of timber harvesting, I highlighted it because it's one of the most significant periods as far as impacts that occurred. And that was a period of expansion for California. Our population went from about 7 million in 1940 to around 20 million in 1976. It's called the Golden Era of California. And a lot of the timber harvesting that occurred was fueled by a taxation system called the ad valorem timber property tax. And essentially, I own a home and I pay property taxes on the structure in the property every year. Now imagine if you had to pay taxes on everything you have in your house also. You basically probably have a lot less stuff. Well, that's how it functioned for that middle timber harvesting period. Your standing timber was taxed, and so you had to reduce it. I believe it was 75% so that you wouldn't be taxed on that, which really fueled a lot of the impacts that we're still dealing with today. So I always like to put that into context. And as a result, in Mendocino County, here's all of our impaired watersheds. Most of them are sediment and temperature, just like Brian had mentioned earlier. Sediment and temperature impaired. There's a couple other impairments in there, but as a general broad stroke, let's say they're all pretty much sediment and temperature impaired. There's some coastal tribes that aren't, but. So, and then here's a barometer on how things are going with our cell lines. Not great. We have species of Chinook that are threatened in Mendocino County. Steelhead are also threatened. Coho in particular, I'm going to touch on further. They're critically endangered. We're in a really bad spot with them. And pink salmon are considered to be extirpated, even though we do have a small run that periodically shows up in the Garcia River. But they're kind of a strange outlier. They, looking back into the earlier periods of California, they didn't really seem to have a big place in California as much. But coho, in particular, we have two evolutionarily significant units of coho in the state. The northern one, where we're standing right now, extends from Oregon, so southern Oregon, northern California coast, ESU of coho, and they're threatened currently. State federally threatened. The central California coast, which includes the Mendocino Coast watershed, is state and federally endangered. And the numbers over on the right show you just how bad kind of things have gotten. This is for both ESU's 350,000 fish in 1940. Then if we jump over to 1960, for the central California coast of ESU, we have around 56,000 fish. And we've plummeted all the way down to less than 1,000 fish in 2009. We're in bad shape. And some of these watersheds are actually blinking out. We haven't had a coho in the Wallala River system since 2004. In 2011, we didn't have any coho below the Golden Gate. It's pretty bad. And so there's a need for action as soon as possible. There's a need for action 20 years ago to prevent us from getting where we're at. But this is what we're working with. In the last couple of years, the populations have come up a little bit. Ocean conditions really improved, and I think that was a big driver of the improvement. But the California Department of Fish and Wildlife recognizes and highlights that in Mendocino County, approximately 85% of the remaining returning anadromous coho salmon, they're all anadromous, excuse me, all of the remaining coho salmon come back to Mendocino County. Again, highlighting the importance of this county in particular. And recovery planning, it's shifted. Now we're looking at extinction prevention. These are our state and federal partners' recovery plans. Actions that they've recommended to prevent extinction are, these are some of them. These are some of the most important ones. Controlling erosion and sedimentation, improving the riparian zone, especially for temperature issues. Enhancing in-stream complexity, which could include large wood introduction, and securing in-stream flows. That's a really important thing. If you don't have water, you don't have fish. And these things are affected in the system in two different ways. Long-term sediment and temperature take a long time to recover from. Some of our sediment-impaired watersheds might take decades or centuries to actually export all the degraded sediment from that era of logging, especially when it was really bad. And then there's more near-term effects that we can have, which are immediate actions that we can take to try and improve things for our solvents. Okay, so we recognize we got some problems. We recognize some actions we can take. Now let's look at how to actually get it done. So permitting, conservation, and restoration projects. I put this up here not for you to actually be able to read it, but just to show this is a series of pathways that have been identified in a separate work group I'm part of called the Wood for Salmon Work Group to identify different permitting pathways for projects. And so I'm going to touch base really briefly on these. We have a very good streamlined permitting program called the Fisheries Restoration Grant Program. That's something that the California Department of Fish and Wildlife administered, and it goes back to the 1980s. It's a very effective program. It consolidates all the permits from the different agencies under their oversight, and then implements different restoration projects, erosion control, etc. Alternatively, you can implement a project through a permit coordination program. I'll touch on that a little bit further. Otherwise, you have to go through this individual permitting pathway. You have to go to all of the different agencies. Here's the federal ones on the left. This includes Fish and Wildlife Service, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, Army Corps of Engineers. Here's the state of California. This is us, Regional Water Quality Control Board. And here's the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. And then you even have the local permits that also apply. And so the feedback that we've been getting all along is that the permitting process is complex, it's expensive, lots of paperwork, lax guidance, there's conflicting requirements at times, but overall it inhibits restoration. And that is one of the things that we're trying very diligently to overcome. But on a personal note, I had an experience in 2008 in the Garcia River where a partner of mine from the Nature Conservancy, who I've been working with for a number of years out there, went through the individual permitting process to try and reintroduce large wood into a creek, in Min Creek. When she came out of it, she told me, she's like, "I don't think I'll ever do this again. It was so difficult to get through. I think I would only do this if it was across a massive property scale." Fortunately, she's gone back and she's done more. She got over it, over the shock, but it really kind of highlighted to me the importance that we need to take action to try and improve things for this. And so that leads us to coordinated permitting again. coordinated permitting offers one-stop permit shopping, technical guidance, financial assistance to different landowners who are seeking to do improvements on their land. And over the years, it's been kind of gaining momentum in California. It started in the central California coast with Elkhorn Slough, and then moved into some river systems. In 2003, in our region, the Mendocino RCD and NRCS partnered together to develop the Navarro River Permit Coordination Program, which is the precursor to what we're going to be talking about today. Over the subsequent years, you'll notice that it started transitioning over from river system, water body system, towards counties. Started recognizing that if we keep taking a bigger approach, we can get even more done. And it doesn't necessarily get cheaper over time to keep doing these, so we might as well try and be very inclusive and expansive. So here we go, Mendocino Permit Coordination Program. Here's all the watersheds that are covered by it. Everything you see in Mendocino County, except a little thin ribbon that goes along the coast. They've omitted that because there's particular endangered species along the coast that would make the levels of complexity for projects right in that area even more difficult. So that's Point Arena Mountain Beaver, Tidewater Goby. There's a couple that are really coastal specific. So those are omitted, but everything else in the county is included. And the goals of it are controlling erosion and sediment, improving in-stream habitat, restoring riparian shade, stabilizing eroding stream banks, all the things that are identified by our state and federal partners also to try and prevent extirpation or extinction of the salmonids we're trying to protect. So like I mentioned before, the permit coordination program is developed jointly by the Mendocino RCD and the Natural Resources Conservation Service. We'll be actually issuing a permit, hopefully, in November to the RCD itself, not to NRCS, because they don't hold permits. It builds upon the Navarro Permit Coordination Program experience, including adding additional conservation and restoration practices, which I'll touch on what that means, increasing project size and the number of projects. Last year, the RCD was able to conduct the CEQA analysis for it. It was a mitigated negative declaration and initial study, which the North Coast Watch Board was able to use some of our discretionary funds to help pay for. So we've been invested in this process also. So the conservation and restoration practices, there's 10 different technical NRCS guidelines, which they form the foundation for the different practices. In the CEQA analysis, there's also environmental protection and mitigation measures, which supplement in on those different practices. As an example, there's general conditions for all projects, and that might be we won't be conducting heavy equipment operation during the middle of the winter. There's additional conditions for specific types of projects, which could be standards for stream culvert design and road engineering, things like that. And then lastly are measures to avoid direct impacts to salmonids and habitat. And those have actually come off of some of the requirements of the NOAA and NIMS biological opinion. So that has to do with like stream dewatering or moving of animals, those types of things. I mentioned this before, the different permits that are coordinated, all the state and federal ones, so I won't go over that again. So the mechanics of the program, here's how it works. Here's the process. So the RCD establishes cooperator agreements with different landowners, basically stating, establishing an arrangement where the RCD and the landowner ensure that a project will be done in a specific way based on the permits that are acquired. The RCD then submits to the different agencies an annual work plan, and that comes in by May 15th every year, and that that lists out all the different conservation and restoration practices, again, across all the different individual landowners that they're working with. They submit that to us. It allows for the agencies, all of them, to review it, and then they can participate in inspections of the projects before they're implemented, provide feedback on some kind of, if something needs to be addressed or changed, or there's a concern about something, things can be addressed before a project is actually implemented. The regional board then, at that point, will provide a notification to the RCD stating, green light, you're covered, or certified, or, like I said, you provide them some feedback on what it would require to be certified or covered. Then the projects are implemented. Monitoring takes place, and afterwards there's a post-construction monitoring report that we get March 15th for all the projects that have been done during the prior year. So, there can be up to 25 different projects done during a given year, and 250 over the entire 10-year period. It is a 10-year program. But they've limited the number of projects to 3 to 5 per year in areas with sensitive species, specifically different salmonids that could be affected by, treatments of roads or stream crossings or things. They want to minimize any kind of effect on those sensitive species. So other benefits that the program provides: education and outreach. The RCD is very effective, and NRCS are very effective at doing outreach to landowners that, frankly, we sometimes don't have access to. There's a lot of gates that are closed, there's a lot of people that are uncomfortable with regulation, and sometimes people just, they want to keep the gates shut, they don't want to come to the table. The RCD is really effective at breaching that distrust and opening the gates and working with landowners. These are, they also, they also come with the opportunity to educate about what the permitting arena is like. They also sometimes are able to acquire public funds to help facilitate these projects. So other things that the program does is it improves government efficiency, which is something that I think we all can agree there's room for. It promotes team yield goals, so especially in these sediment and temperature impaired watersheds. It promotes legal projects, so landowners aren't forced in certain circumstances to either decide between running the permitting gauntlet to make an improvement on their land or otherwise operating without all the adequate permits. And then it promotes watershed stewardship principles. We've been talking about watershed stewardship quite a bit more recently. RCD is a great facilitator of promoting those types of principles. And this is an important mechanism for getting that accomplished. So here we go into our permit. So we, out for public comment right now is a draft order number R1-2013-0059, which you have now. It's a general water quality certification and a waiver of waste discharge requirements. It includes project eligibility, implementation standards, the requirement for an annual work plan to be submitted, the requirement for a certification fee to be submitted to us, and then on our end of things, we have to, by law, renew these permits every 5 years. That's a requirement for a waiver and for a general certification. They have a 5-year shelf life. So in 5 years after adoption of a permit, if you choose to adopt this in November, we would be coming back to say, we want to either renew it or modify it, and you'll be hearing about it again. There's also a monitoring and reporting program that goes along with it. There's 4 different types of monitoring that can be included with projects. Implementation and effectiveness are required in all projects. Photo point is something regularly included. And then project response monitoring. So under certain types of projects, they might have monitoring in stream to see if there's an actual change in stream channel weather conditions. And then there's an annual project status report that I mentioned previously that will be coming in on March 15th of every year. Public review starts September 17th. It's a 45-day public review. It ends on November 1st. And then, like I mentioned, on November 20th or 21st, we'll be bringing our proposed order to you for consideration of adoption. Conclusions. So, Mendocino watersheds are important and they're impaired. And the status of the salmonids that are there require us to take action now. And that includes all salmonids, although coho, I've highlighted in particular the benefits of projects we do for coho also benefit steelhead, also can benefit chinook salmon. Conservation and restoration projects are needed. We really need to try and make it over that gauntlet, trying to start promoting these types of things if we want to see recovery, if we want to see these species stay around. It's really important that we can help promote recovery. The individual permitting process, it inhibits these types of projects, and it impedes progress towards team yield goals. And the permit coordination program is a really important catalyst to overcome that. But we do need more. And lastly, I think that we, the regulatory community, also must continue to recognize that advocacy is good policy. We're really good at making regulations. That's what the 20th century model really included. But the 21st century also has to recognize that in addition to regulations, we also need to come up with pathways and ways to also allow for good projects to move forward to. So with that, I'll turn it over to you. If you have any questions, I can sit down.
Thanks, Jack. It looks like from this that there is an abundance of projects, but it looks like, from 25 projects proposed per year to implement in 3 to 5, is that just because there's a careful metering? Is it based on funding, or is it based on what potential group, what agencies can be happy? Why the disparity between the number of candidate potential projects and then what they should be implemented?
The reason there's the 3 to 5 limitation is based on sub-basins that have sensitive species. So within any given sub-basin, like the North Fork of the Barra, for instance, the RCD might come to us and say, this year we're going to be implementing 4 different projects total just within that sub-watershed. Doesn't mean that they're not going to be still implementing projects elsewhere, but it's just to limit any kind of negative influence from, there's an adjustment period that takes place after erosion control work and stream crossings are improved or stream bank stabilization. You can have some discharges that do occur.
Right.
And by limiting and spreading that up over years, then you limit the exposure and influence on the species that are there.
So then, realizing that, that gets to the prioritization of projects, right? So how then do you envision projects would be prioritized? Is it by committee? Is it how do they candidate projects out and game up and saying this is the couple that we're going to do?
Well, it's initially started by the RCD in their annual work plan proposal to the different agencies. So the regulatory community also is allowed to look at that and, if need be, stratify those over whatever a number of years.
Mr. Messer.
A couple of questions. First of all, John, that was a very, very nice exhibition.
Yes.
Seeing the little gears go around there, I suddenly fall asleep. Thank you. I don't think there's anybody that's objecting to this, but I would ask the question, is there somebody that does not like this program? I can't envision that it would be, but...
I don't know.
I didn't think so, but this is the stuff that we should be doing. Do we have any estimates of the cost savings to the individual? I mean, you show the graphic of all the places you got to go, and I'm sure each one of them, once they're dying, do we have an idea of how much this would save an individual landowner for, instead of doing this, we just go here to one-stop shop?
I'd be hard-pressed to answer that. I could ask Patty if she... Okay, you have someone came. Please come up.
You promise we won't say.
State your name.
I'm Patty Madden from the Mendocino County Resource Conservation District. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, staff, thank you so much for allowing me to speak today. So, how much money would it save an individual landowner? It depends on the scale and the size of the project. But I would say it would save them a minimum of probably $1,200 just for the permit fee on a larger project that doesn't fit within the small habitat 401 designation. We have the CEQA already done for this project, so the individual landowner that either partners with the Resource Conservation District or NRCS has the advantage of not having to develop an individual CEQA, well, in our case, it's a mitigated negative declaration. It cost us $40,000, so we hate to think that everybody would have to do their own individual CEQA, but that is a point of fact that if you do not fall under Fish and Game's Fisheries Restoration Grant Program and your project is not CEQA exempt, you have to start that process from the beginning for every project that you do. So it could be thousands of dollars, but it isn't necessarily saving the RCD a lot of footwork because we have a lot of compliance issues in order to minimize impacts. But for the landowner, it's definitely a boost.
Can I suggest that between now and November we get sort of a handle on that, because that really, that's the one thing we hear constantly, repeatedly, is it takes my time to do it. You can't, and that's a hard thing to estimate. But it costs me money as an individual landowner. And we hear it repeatedly.
To say to the regional board that they're pretty lightweight in terms of their fees compared to Fish and Game. We hope to eventually work with Fish and Game to modify their fee structure.
No, Mr. St. John, we're undercharging that.
I would say that this year on one project alone it was almost $10,000 from Fish and Game, and it was about $2,000 from the regional board if you added everything up. So it's interesting because frequently this is not being paid by the landowner, it's being paid out of the grant fee, so it's just kind of like a shuffling funds amongst agencies. And it is definitely something that we think is facilitated through this program, is a lower cost to the landowner for sure.
Thank you.
Patty, can I ask, I had the luck to go into the Garcia Watershed, and we met you and some of your colleagues and NRCS folks on with some projects, and I envisioned that that's the kind of project we're talking about. The projects that we looked at in the Upper Garcia that day.
They were all individually permitted.
Right.
We did not have the CEQA done at the time that project was going to construction, but definitely that is a typical project where we're upgrading roads and culverts and replacing undersized culverts, sometimes with bridges. We're controlling invasive plant infestations, and we're planting native plant species, and we're doing some bioengineering with native material, and we're also helping enhance coho and steelhead habitat, and where appropriate, Chinook habitat. So these are things we do all the time, and we're another public agency, and we still have to hold the same permits as an individual landowner. So we are sort of a broker for that, so to speak. We help find the landowners who are willing to have projects done on their property. Then we try to find agencies that help to fund, and then we also facilitate the permitting, because it's way complicated. I have to say that individual landowners probably get fish and game permits frequently and stop there. And so that there's a lot of work that's being done without proper oversight. And so this not only helps people come into compliance and helps meet our TMDL goals, but it actually improves practices. So.
Well, and I think that at the same time, it was quite evident that day, the work that was done on that project itself, the amount of work, the success of that work that looked like had occurred. And you then export that kind of experience and work out into the larger scheme of Mendocino County watersheds. And we get the great benefit of also having, I know that, you know, a lot of work has been, intense amount of work has been put into the Garcia, and lessons learned there, to be able to pull some of that lesson out and experience and couple it with the RCDs. RCDs are fascinating to me because you guys are just doing all sorts of stuff, and I think you don't get quite the credit you deserve all the time in the public realm of the facilitation of projects. I think a lot of projects, you not only do all the things you describe and you facilitate that project, you oftentimes bring funding and regulatory expertise. It's wonderful. It's really quite inspiring to see these projects going on. And the net benefit potentially that we're looking at here on a watershed scale is really going to be quite significant.
We don't do a very good job of marketing, but we did complete 31 projects under the Navarro program, and that was in a 7-year period. So we're pretty excited to launch this new program.
Jonathan, can I ask you, so we're talking about many agencies here, and federal and state agencies, and so we're developing building permits. So what are these other agencies doing? Because we essentially are, if you go the gamut individually, instead of a coordinated programming system or permitting system, you potentially are just dealing individually with all these agencies. And how do we avoid an agency territory or turf issue that, hey, my authority's here and I'm going to preserve our authority? Of course, we always want to preserve our authority, always, but at the same time, do we essentially have buy-off on this type of program and permit with our participating agencies?
Well, there's a lot to that, actually. It's pretty interesting how it works out. I mean, it's really a relationship being established by the RCD with the individual agencies. So we're one partner in this discussion, and the RCD has had individual relationships developing with all the different agencies themselves. So some of them are pretty progressive about wanting to take on the same type of approach. Army Corps of Engineers is looking at developing a regional general permit to encompass all of the different types of projects that are done under this. The NOAA is allowing use of an existing biological opinion for restoration. And so those things all are individual relationships that need to be established first. And then when the RCD submits to all the agencies an actual a work plan with the different projects they intend to do, I think at that point is when we would come together and identify whether there's overlap or inconsistencies or anything like that that needs to be addressed. Sort of similar and parallel to how it works in the timber harvest planning process. Different agencies with different authority come out on a pre-harvest inspection and we discuss what our observations are and recommendations for addressing our individual authorities.
Well, I fully agree with Board Member Massey. I think I read that, and Heidi Harris said it this morning, and we've said it many times before, that any times that we could find the economy of doing things plurally instead of individually, I think there's great regulatory benefit out there on the side of end users, on the side of the regulatory agencies themselves, and for the project, and which is really the goal here, to go out and do these projects. I think it's a great program. I think that this type of thing, having it in Mendocino County and starting in there, who knows where it goes from there, but I think that it's quite interesting and it's quite innovative and it's good timing and it's a really great thing. Any other comments or questions, Mr. Corbett?
Well, I just wanted to say, one is I do think more and more we're trying to look at collectively how we deal with restoration projects from a lot of planes, like this one very positive approach. It also, by doing group ones, you get to look at cumulative impacts, and it's very difficult on an individual permit. And it also expands our efforts out in the field in a way we can't do with it. We don't have the bodies. And so I think this approach needed for a waiver or a waste discharge permit, depending on future. And then if you go all the way back to some of our waivers where we have whole categories we haven't addressed yet and trying to fill the gaps, I think this can provide an ideal solution to doing that. You can check off the box for the state order, or you can actually do something out with the community. I think this is part of the ladder.
Other comments or questions?
I just wanted to say, wow, that was a great presentation. But your last slide there, I tend to be sort of a philosophical person on this board, big picture, kind of where I'm coming from. But, you know, the fact that you said, you know, that our mantra should be now regulation through advocacy just speaks volumes. That's completely different from sitting in front of this board 5 years ago. How you felt as someone sitting on that side. And so I appreciate that, you know, you've said that out loud, that we continue to, and I think that through Mr. St. John's leadership, that's where we're headed. That we are going to cater. It's not just regulation. It's kind of holding hands and getting the job done. So I appreciate that you called that out. Thank you.
Merci.
Well, I just want to say thank you, Pam, for staying over, because I realized now you get a 250-minute dash to Tennessee County.
Yeah, try to keep it down.
No tickets.
Well, well done. Thank you very much for coming. So this is up for public comment now, right, Jonathan? So this comes before us in November for consideration and adoption. Look forward to it. Thank you very much, both of you. I have noticed the speaker cards, so we will close that item. It's information. Thank you, Jonathan, again. We will move on.